Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show here on another Wednesday night. It is October 7th, and we're live on Facebook, and you can get involved with the show if you'd like to. You can, of course, use your Facebook, you know, little chat room there that we got on Facebook Live. You can do that. You can also email me at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. So we're going forward into October. I can't believe it. This is just crazy. I can't believe it's October already. That's number one. Here in the north, we have some nice little stretch of some warmish weather. It was cold for sure last week, so I'm excited that the 70s have come back, and I'm super excited about that. It's always good when you can kind of stretch what feels a little bit like early summer weather here in the north. And I hope all of you are doing great in your neck of the woods, even though we are still, right, battling through the things we are all battling with. FSHD aside, it's also what's happening still in our world, right? We're dealing with the pandemic still. We're dealing with political issues. We're dealing with social injustice issues. And I'm just glad that we can maybe kind of put it on pause a bit, come in this little community show that we've all created together, and share some good comments back and forth, some community building here within this FSHD Society community, within this radio show. So I welcome you all here. We have a great guest in store for you tonight. It's a musician, singer, songwriter. His name is Josh Bergman. He's going to be in today plugging last week's episode with Jenny and Tony Teal. You can still listen to that episode. It is available anywhere you find podcasts, for the most part. Spotify, which is my place of choice. I know we are now on Podcast Addict along with other hosting sites for podcasts. So just search FSHD Society Radio. You'll find us. All the episodes are on there. I think this is episode 46 is what we're into right now. So awesome, right? We're marching to episode 50. That's our goal. And now that we're going once a week, man, whoo, I tell you. Yeah, they start adding up really, really, really fast. So I'm hoping that you're enjoying them as much as I'm enjoying bringing these episodes to you. And like I said, you can find all those past episodes anywhere you find podcasts. Next week, let's keep plugging the shows here. We're also going to have a great guest, and that's going to be about our mindfulness episode. But we're going to have Kent Drescher in, and he's going to talk a little bit about what he does in his work of mindfulness and helping people cope and heal. And I hope you can come back in a week and talk with me and Kent as we dive into the mindful and the emotional side of FSHD, as I like to say. But today is the featured guest episode. Today is the episode where we bring in, you know, when we kick off the month, it's going to be the featured guest. And this month's episode, I'm super geeked about this because I love musicians. I was telling this to our guest before we went live, how I kind of go gaga over just musicians. I think they're just awesome, fun people and interesting cats, I'll tell you. And Josh, I think, is going to deliver today. So we welcome in musician, singer, songwriter Josh Bergman into the show today. Hi, Josh. How are you doing?
What's happening? Thanks for having me on the show here.
Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, the pleasure is all mine. And you deliver a great radio voice to help. So thanks for that. You know, you don't disappoint there.
I'll try to use my lower register for listening folks.
You know, those that are cuddled up by the fire and they need to just kind of, you know, settle in as Josh tells you a little tale of his life and music here.
Nice.
On FSHD Society.
You got it down, too. You got it down.
If you ever need anybody to introduce your live shows, I'd love to. That's the only part I want. I'll just run out there. I'll grab the mic. All right, everybody, welcome, you know, and then I'm out. And then I'll just sit there and watch the rest
duly
of the
noted.
Show. Yeah, That'll be fun. That'll be fun.
I'll keep that in mind for when live music makes this big comeback.
Yes, yes. Oh, and it's going to be huge, right? It's going to be huge when it does. I know you're chomping at the bit to get back out on stage. I can only imagine. That's going to be one of my questions down the road for sure about crowd energy and that. But for those that don't know who you are, Josh, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. You have FSHD. So if you'd love to, I'd love to hear that, you know, FSHD story too, if you'd like to share that. So kind of get the audience a little bit to know you.
I'm 26 years old. I live here in Ohio, California. And I was diagnosed with FSHD at about, age 19 or age 20. So I've been living with it for about 6 years. And, these days and for the past handful of years, I've been working basically full time as a musician. And, that entails like touring all the time and, under normal circumstances at least. Mm-hmm. And, I make, music videos and studio albums, all that good stuff, everything that you could imagine all the musician's life entailing whilst coping with FSHD, which certainly presents some challenges.
Generally
with my music, FSHD is a really important part of the way that I make music and my artistic outlook, just my outlook in general in life, for better or for worse. But it's definitely inspired a lot of profundity in my art and my music, and fueled it in a lot of ways, even though it makes it harder to play. Hmm. So I've always been really open about that, and kind of sharing that aspect of my life as well.
So when you were 19, so you were diagnosed then, did you have some signs even before that age that you thought something was a little off, or... You know, is there any like early
maybe
signs of weakness?
Subtle signs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some subtle signs before that, but I was actually a collegiate athlete at the time of my diagnosis, and I was like really into athletics. I come from a really athletic family. My dad played for the Kansas City Chiefs as a tight end, so like this competitive fuel kind of runs through my veins, and getting that diagnosis when I was in the midst of a collegiate athletics career was it was pretty devastating for sure.
Wow. So your dad, a football player. Sorry, I mean you threw me a curveball there. I should have did better research.
I might catch you with that one.
Yeah. Right. Nice. That's pretty wild. I'm a football fan like many out there. And what was that like growing up around that, having a parent in the NFL?
So he was retired by the time I came around, but still his competitive edge has not left him one iota. And it's pretty hilarious, you know, playing like rec basketball and having him just like screaming his head off at a rec basketball game. But I guess I've never known anything different, so it never really bothered me. And I myself am a pretty competitive person in that way too. So I don't blame the guy.
Oh man, that's funny. I can just imagine that. Cause you know, that is exactly what, like I'm a baseball or a youth baseball coach. Right. So I do get a little bit of the opposing coaches, not necessarily myself. Maybe early on I was a little too yelly, but yeah, you get like the parents or the coaches that are usually a parent and you're like, whoa, that guy's really intense. You know,
So I, funny. It never bothered me at all, but my...
Nope. Josh, you still there? Oh, we lost some folks. We're reconnecting. Everybody hang tight. Josh, you still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. I think it was my end. I got you disconnected there for a second. So you said that you thought that the yelling didn't bother you as much.
Did you catch the bit about my poor sisters? My poor sisters having to deal with my dad? Because it never bothered me. But it got to the point with my sisters where they had to forbid him from coming to their game because he would just lose it.
Oh, my gosh. So what sport did you do, or did you, you know, what were you an athlete in college? What was your main sport?
I was playing volleyball.
Volleyball. Nice.
Volleyball was kind of the main the main thing for me in college. And music was at that point kind of on the back burner for me. Mm-hmm. Although I was always really passionate about it. I was at least equally passionate about athletics.
Yeah.
Then I got diagnosed and kind of had to shift gears. And, you know, I'm grateful that I had music to fall back on. Even though, like, it's hardly something to fall back on, like, career-wise, financially, or anything like that. But still, I'll take it.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's a little bit more difficult to earn a, you know, consistent living, maybe. You know, especially when you're starting mm-hmm. out, I'd imagine that's probably very challenging and maybe exciting yeah. at the same time. Maybe waiting for that break, like the next gig might equal, you know, different people hearing your music, hence, you know, more following, more money, et cetera. So mm-hmm. I can imagine the drive is there to achieve, you know, bigger goals and keep going with it. But the point is that, right. I mean, you're doing what you love to do. And taking on that struggle, even though it is a struggle nonetheless, it's still got to be awesome to be doing something that you love.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a small price to pay, you know, and like it can be stressful and overwhelming sometimes thinking about the future and this like lack of stability that I have. But like it's so worth it every time I like get to express myself and really like just pour myself out into my music or into like, we have a particularly awesome performance or this recording session went particularly well. And just like, so filled me up that it just, you know, I could care less about the future financial security or something like that when I get to do what I love.
Right.
Especially cause yeah. And like traveling and stuff, getting to travel around and do what I love. Yeah. No, nothing could beat it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think that's why I'm slightly envious of you musicians out in the world that are making their mark, because I can sense that they love it. If they didn't, I don't think they would do it. They're, you know, gifted enough to perform in front of people. You know, it's not like, I don't know if I've ever really been to a live performance and I'm like, wow, these guys stink. Why do they do this? You know, I never think that. I might say, oh, this is good. It's not my taste, but this is good. You know, or you can feel the passion mm-hmm. from a live performance or something like that, and their energy, which is usually very infectious and makes you go out and grab that album. Or, well, that was back in my day. You'd go buy the CD or tape. Yeah. So that's,
there's something about it for sure. There's something about it.
So you started, maybe music was a little more in the forefront or started to get pushed more into the lead over athletics than after 19 years old, after your diagnosis. Was it something then you realized, oh, okay, I'm not going to do the sports then. I'm going to go do music. Was it that simple of a decision, or was there more complicated elements to it?
If like there was any time between like that decision, it was brief. I've known pretty much my whole life that I wasn't really cut out for like a 9-to-5 office job, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, I appreciate that reassurance. Actually.
Oh yeah. No. To me, yeah.
Sometimes it seems like that kind of thing goes without being said, but mm-hmm. sometimes it's easy to forget that, you know?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with making a living in something that you absolutely love. I mean, you know, a lot of us could look back and go, man, if I would have made this decision, maybe I'd be really doing something I really love to do, or whatever it could be. And that to me is something, I mean, I've even myself have struggled with, man, why didn't I pursue coaching and those kind of things earlier? Like, I knew I loved it, man. If I look back, you know, the road was there. What was I doing? Mm-hmm. Why was I not thinking that way? So the fact that you knew at, you know, your age of 19, 20 years old and so on, when you're being diagnosed with this disease, pivoting, hey, but I love music. I'm going forward with this. Obviously you're very talented mm-hmm. at it. To me, that is more heroic than the other, you know, than saying, I'm going to go this route because it's safer, you know?
Yeah, man.
Or like more boring.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm really grateful for those folks too, because, you know, they're, keep society running.
Oh, yeah.
While us yeah. artists can like cruise around and do whatever the hell we're doing.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. Yes, no. I've definitely worked the 9-to-5 job in warehouses and customer service and those kind of things. And my wife's an accountant. And to me, you know, passion is all a matter of a point of view. You know, I can tell my wife is extremely into what she does for a living. She loves it. And yet she looks at me when I'm done with like coaching or something, and she's like, how do you work with kids that aren't yours like that? You know, like, it's like, she understands why I like it, but she's like, I don't know if I could do that. So you're right. It takes a whole world. Yeah. To make things run, and everyone needs to, you know, do, I think, you know, what they're good at and find love and the passion within it. Hence you're doing what you love for a living, whatever that may be.
Yeah, definitely. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in an interesting way, the diagnosis actually, it pushed me towards that kind of like in the moment, like pursue what you love right now while you can, because you can right now kind of mentality, you know, because like I got this diagnosis and I'm learning about this disease and I'm like, man, it's probably going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better. You know, like I should probably like do what I, whatever. Man. Builds me up the most right now while I can.
Hmm. Amen. Yeah, I think I had that same feeling. You know, when I was diagnosed, I remember, you know, a couple things. You know, one, I had this overwhelming realization that I probably should have had when I was younger, that there's no way in heck that, and I'm watching people walk in and out of this, you know, doctor's building or whatever, and I'm thinking there's no way I'm the only one that is walking in one kind of person and walking out someone completely different, or gotten some type of news that has changed perspective, thinking, etc. It just really put my brain around the fact that there's no way that you're the only person dealing with this kind of thing today. Maybe not this exact kind of thing, but someone's getting something like this, and just opened my eyes, like almost to say to myself, yeah, stupid, you know, there's people suffering out there. Why have you been ignoring it? You know, by saying it'll never happen to me, you know, I'm just going to keep cruising along. It just opened my eyes to realize, man, there's some things I can maybe do better. I could be a better person here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think, yeah. Pivoting life and trying to line up the things that you're passionate about, good at, and then contributing, you know, your music does that. It contributes to society in a positive way. And then with the FSHD, the fact that you're not necessarily dismissing it, you put it out in the forefront. People know about it. You're, you know, not shy about saying something about it. Hence, it brings more people to the table of knowledge of, oh, this is what this muscular dystrophy is and this is how it affects it. And yet you still play music. What instrument do you play, Josh?
In my band, the Rose Valley Thorns, I mostly play, I play mandolin.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of like a bluegrass band, bluegrass-ish at least. And, mandolin's kind of a feature instrument of that genre. And I don't know how, maybe in some sort of kind of masochistic inclination, I found myself playing bluegrass mandolin, which just has to be one of the more physically taxing stringed instruments that you can possibly choose to play.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't look easy. I mean, what part of your body are you mostly affected by with the FSHD?
For me, it's almost exclusively affecting my upper body right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've like basically completely lost both my pecs, both my traps and, both my lats and some other, you know, the winging, of course,
yep,
that is so common with it. And then my right bicep and tricep are both basically gone.
Okay.
So, you know, it makes even just like holding my arm up at a 90-degree angle to like strum a chord on, it's really difficult sometimes, much less doing it like at a, you know, a million miles an hour, like on some super fast banging bluegrass tune and, you know,
yeah.
for hours on end sometimes. Honestly, I surprise myself almost every time I make it through like a tough gig. I'm like, wow, I can't believe I did that. Cause I'll like go home and barely be able to lift up my like water bottle or something like that. And I'm like, how was I able to crank out like 2 hours of bluegrass music?
Wow. When you're in that moment though, when you're playing, if it's live or even just, you know, doing a recording or working on music, do you feel like, you're kind of lost in it where you don't even notice the struggle to it?
Like I'm aware of it because because like the pain is pretty prominent a lot of the time when I'm like really laying into it. But I guess it just never bothered me. Like, I don't know, I almost thrive off of it in a weird way. Like, I used that word masochistic earlier, and I was like barely joking when I said that.
It does kind of fuel you. Like, I, you know, when I'm doing, and I'm always trying to, you know, reference it to the things I do, but I know others that are listening can probably nod their head in agreement if there's something that they almost refuse to give up the fight of the thing that they love to do. So they will pivot, they will adjust, they will do whatever it takes as long as they can to continue to do it. So like I'll go for a 6-hour, you know, coaching from one team to the next on like a Saturday, especially like during the winter. We do a lot of winter training for baseball, and I'm crazy. I coach 3 teams. So I could easily be gone on a Saturday for 2 hours each practice times 3 teams. When I come home, you know, and I know when I'm done, like I know when I sit, that's it. Like, don't ask me to get up and do stuff now, because as soon as I stop, I'm going to stop. It seems like the momentum of the day gets me through it. It's just when I'm done, then I start realizing, whoa, my legs really hurt, or much BP did I throw?
I paid the price when I really go all out, but I don't know. I still find something redeeming in it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like this disease is trying to be like, oh, you don't have a muscle. Like, oh, it hurts. Like, you can't do this. I'm like, screw you, man. Like, I'll show you what I can do with no bicep and with like pain. I'll play 2 hours of bluegrass music just in spite of you kind of thing.
Yeah. So the way you say it like that too, that's how my wife and I deal with the FSHD a little bit from time to time. We make it like it's its own identity. You know, we'll like shake our fist at it and go, stupid FSHD or something like that. You know, something to be like, oh, it tries to get us down. No, you won't, you know, or, you know, something happens, like total random error or mistake in life. Like, you know, it has nothing to do with FSHD. I would just look at my wife and go, it's the FSHD. You know, she's like, yep. You know, it's like this like it's evil entity that does things.
It's
that we're like,
target.
Yeah, like just poke it at that. So I totally agree with your mindset on it. I really do. I think that's awesome. You know, that's so awesome. When it comes to though, the style of music, you know, the bluegrass being very difficult, to play, what drew you to that style? Was it something that you were really into younger? So just natural progression into it?
It's been kind of an inexplicable, like degenerative process, I guess, that's brought me to bluegrass. Being here on the West Coast, there's like very little of it around, and I certainly wasn't born into it or anything like that. I've been introduced to it by a couple of friends, like a family friend when I was like a sophomore in high school. I was playing music at the time, but I'd never really had experience with mandolin or bluegrass or anything like that. And he's like, hey, why don't you come over and hang out with me and my buddies? Next thing you know, I'm like playing mandolin in this like bluegrass band with like a bunch of 40-year-old recovering alcoholics and like my English teacher or something. So that
what
was
a
like
picture
my first introduction to it. And, you know, I had a great time playing with these guys, great guys. But I never really took it that seriously. And then, after my diagnosis, after I kind of gave up athletics, I started studying music in school. And, my focus was kind of on jazz guitar. And I got so fed up with trying to learn and trying to play jazz guitar that I'm like, screw this, man. I am picking up the mandolin. I'm playing the easiest, most hillbilly music I can find. And I ended up with some good old 3-chord bluegrass tunes.
Wild. Wild.
And I've hardly looked back.
So, like, you never once thought, like, I'm going to play some 90s grunge or 80s hair band music or something like that?
I definitely love playing electric guitar too, and I need an outlet for that as well. And lately my outlet has just been like laying loops by myself in my room, but hopefully when this is all over, I can start a rock band too. Bluegrass is kind of like the main interest for me, but I'm pretty eclectic with my music tastes and the things that I like to play.
And then the family ties within the music. Your brother's in the band with you, the Rose Valley Thorns. So I think that's,
yeah, that's right.
That's pretty cool. Your brother Jared's in there, and then a good friend of yours, Corey, makes up the three piece band, right? Unless I'm missing somebody, yep. It's the three of you, right?
Yeah, just three piece.
What was the story behind how the Rose Valley Thorns was put together?
Shortly after my diagnosis, my brother and I, he had just graduated high school. We decided to just go travel the world. We wanted to travel the world. And Jared, my brother Jared, he hadn't been playing any guitar or any music at this point. And he's like, well, if we're traveling, and we ended up going out for like 6 months. So we spent a long time traveling out abroad. He's like, I want to be able to play music with you. So I started teaching him how to play guitar. And I think within 3 months of him starting to play guitar, I already had him playing shows with me.
Wow.
He just got so good so fast. It was crazy.
So it's kind of in the family a little bit. The talent.
I guess so. Must be in there somewhere. I mean, definitely no sign of it with like my dad or my mom. But there must be some kind of genetic in there that's inclined towards it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So we travel the world for like 6 months, making music, having a ball. We come back, and I produced my first EP. It's like a 6-track EP of original tunes. It's titled Joshua Bergman. And I had my buddy Corey Heiberg, who's our bass player now, and has been for years, lay some bass tracks, and I had Jared lay some guitar tracks. And then after that, I was like, oh, well, you guys want to like keep doing this? You guys want to be a band? And yeah, the Rose Valley Thorns were born.
And with the birth of that, then where did the name come from? Is there a story with that too?
Yeah, sure. Rose Valley is this really, really beautiful piece of nature up here in the mountains outside of Ojai. It's in the Los Padres National Forest, and it's a place that I've been going to, camping, hiking, you know, all that stuff since I was a little kid. It was also a place that was like really important to me as I was like coping with all this anguish of dealing with muscular dystrophy. And like spending time in nature has always been like super cathartic for me when I'm trying to come to terms with things, and just like sometimes going out there and just sitting, just being in the tranquility out there would just kind of work wonders for my mental state. We kind of ended up paying some homage to that place and to our lovely little hometown here of Ojai as well.
That's sweet. I love that. I love the fact that it's about something that you kind of retreat to. It means a lot to you instead of, I don't know, we just, you know, thought that sounded good together. You know?
Yeah,
Rose
yeah,
Valley.
Totally.
There we go. Yeah. How about the songwriting? Where does the inspiration come for, you know, or from, you know, some of these songs? Like I really loved the song app for that, or there's an app for that. That one's funny.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like quick witted music, you know, with good storytelling. Where does all that inspiration come from?
Well, I don't know. Usually for me, it's about struggles. You know, yeah. I mean, even after that, which is like a really whimsical song, is like, it's about like me struggling with technology and like finding a place in this like technologically oriented world and all that stuff. So yeah, very rarely do I like sit down and write a song when I'm like feeling like really satisfied with life. Like, I don't know if I've ever really like written a song about just like being pretty happy or like being pretty content. it's usually from the more challenging things.
Yeah. So you're inspired by the challenge and challenges, right, of life, which like some might take as, oh, this is going to be a really sad song. But some of the songs, a lot of them, you're right, have this upbeat melody to it. So do you ever find mm-hmm. that people are dancing along, but if they really would hear the lyrics, they'd be like, wait a minute, what's this about? Do you have some songs like that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I try to reflect both some optimism amidst whatever bit of darkness I'm trying to express in my songwriting. Because in the end, I do want to make people happy with my music, you know.
Well, right.
Like I want to make them feel something in general. So if they feel identify with me and my sad songs, that's great. But if I can make them happy, then that's awesome too, and I love doing that as well.
What comes first in songwriting for you? Is it the lyrics or is it the melody?
It's usually the melody. It's usually the music. I'll like sit down and something will kind of captivate me, just like some movement of music or some like even just like a chord change or a little melodic hook. And depending on like what kind of thought that music evokes from me is kind of usually the direction that the lyrics will go to. Hmm.
I find that when I listen to music, for whatever reason, you're talking about, you know, writing music and making music about, you know, not so great times, or, you know, we're using that as some of the inspiration. But I personally do find myself gravitated to some songs that are not, you know, lighthearted in nature. There's sometimes sad songs, but yet they don't necessarily make me feel sad. I just like it. Mm-hmm. I like the song talking about a struggle or a story of a heartbreak or something like that. For whatever reason,
yeah,
I'm more
totally
drawn to that. Do you find that a lot with even yourself or other people listening to your music, that they're the same way?
Absolutely. It doesn't really matter. Like even the songs that I write, like I have this song called Old Bones, and it's explicitly about my struggles with muscular dystrophy. But everybody can relate to it. And it's like one of like all of our followers, like favorite songs. Everybody loves that song just because everybody can relate to it to some degree, you know?
Yeah. I think I totally agree that everyone has some type of struggle, right? If it's even a physical struggle, mental struggle, I just think it's something that people relate to overall. So even if it's more specifically written about something you're struggling with, like you said, Old Bones, for instance, is very geared towards your particular disease. But I'll guarantee there's a lot of people that don't know FSHD but can relate to the song regardless. You know, and I think that
absolutely,
that beauty of what musicians can do, such as yourself, is kind of bridge those, you know, gaps within people and make a song relatable for the masses. You know, and then you have the connection, mm-hmm. and then they feel something, which is what your goal is for songwriters. That's just amazing power to have.
Yeah. It definitely makes it worthwhile to see like my art and my music actually affect people.
Stories from the road. I love listening to some musicians, you know, if I'm asking them myself, if I have the pleasure of talking with them, or just listening to, you know, interviews that they have about stories that they have on tour. You know, there's always seems to be some that are funny or just odd. You're like, wow, you know, it's I don't know, they're just entertaining to listen to. Do you have any that you could share with us? I'm kind of putting you on the spot, granted, so that's why I'm talking a while,
course,
so
man.
That you kind of go through your Rolodex of memories.
Musicians expose themselves to like the most ridiculous scenarios and crazy crap happening. I'm no exception, certainly.
Is there one that you would like to share one with us, Josh, please?
Sure. So we had a nice string of bad luck amongst other things when we were on tour just last summer. It's kind of like a big out-of-state tour for us, which is not a common thing. Usually we stick around to the West Coast, but we piled in the van and took off for Colorado for about 2 months.
Wow.
And it was great. It was very eventful. And overall, I still look back on it fondly, but certainly a lot of things went just horrendously wrong. One of which, we were at this like Deadhead bar, and after a gig, it was a really cool venue. The story is that my mandolin was stolen, but
whoa.
I'll confess here that, what really happened is we were loading out side of the venue, and I was piling stuff up next to my van.
Yeah.
And, kind of tucked a couple pieces of equipment, including like my really nice Weber mandolin, underneath my van.
Oh no.
And, we're loading up and, you know, got a little distracted here and there. There's some pretty girls around, you know,
of course.
And, you know, some after party with some pretty girl invite gets thrown out there, and I hop in my van and I go without thinking twice. And unbeknownst to me, my mandolin and my, cable bag were still underneath my van.
Oh, no.
And I left like a $4,000 mandolin in the parking lot of that music venue and never saw it again.
Oh my gosh. What happened then at the next gig? I mean, unless that was the last one for that tour, what did you do without a mandolin from there?
We were like mid weekend on, on this. So I had like two more shows like that weekend. So we roll up to the next show, and I'm like looking under my bed in my van, and I'm like, where's my mandolin? And it hits me like a ton of bricks, man. I'm like, no. I lost it. It's gone. My mandolin's gone. So that show, I just had Jared play guitar while I sat there with a drink in my hand and like sung along sorrowfully, yeah, more or less.
Oh my gosh.
After that show, I had to just go buy a new mandolin on the spot. Pretty much spent it like any money that I had made on the tour just
to get
on a backup mandolin right then.
Holy cow. So if anybody wants to start, you know, helping Josh maybe get another mandolin just in case this ever happens again, please do so. Wow. That is terrible. But, you know,
you
figured it
one.
Out. But, oh my gosh. I really, you know what I do? I blame that on the woman that distracted you, clearly, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
Clearly.
It was pretty obvious what happened. Jared's like, you got too excited about that girl, man. I'm like,
yeah,
I know.
But did you have a nice time with the girl regardless?
It was almost worth it.
It was almost worth it. Dang it. Oh.
Almost worth it in the end.
Oh, man.
Okay. And that wasn't even it. There's plenty of other crazy things that happened, but, like on the literal last day of that tour, we had just played a festival in California. We cover over 7,000 miles on this tour, this road trip. And the literal last day, I'm like 150 miles from home after 7,000 plus miles. Hmm. I send my van off into a ravine and just launch it into this ditch.
Were you doing that on purpose? You thought it would be fun, or?
I thought it'd be really fun, so I did it on purpose. No, it's stupid. It was really stupid. What actually happened was this stupid little yellow jacket flew into the window, and it's buzzing me. And I wasn't really that distracted by it. I wasn't like, you know, until it went into my shorts. And then once it's in my shorts, I start freaking out a little bit, trying to get it out of my shorts. And then I look up and I'm just soaring off this highway.
Oh my.
And you know, I suppose if we're looking at it this way, that if there is the best day that you could possibly crash your tour van on tour, on the last day after the last show is the most ideal time to do it.
I suppose.
But it was still just like, it hurts so bad to like be so close to that finish line and not cross it.
That is wild. All over a beat. And you painted the right picture, because I think a lot of us have been there where the bug is in there, or it's a spider, or if it's a, you know, you're driving, or it's a bee, and it's like, you're right, man. I'm not dealing with that well. If the thing is going up my shorts, sorry, that's just not going to, there's a lot of bad things that are going to happen.
The situation gets a little more dire, for sure.
It does. There's certain areas of your body you don't want swollen by a bee bite. So this is not what we want to do. I can totally relate. I was totally laughing though. Yeah, I had to turn my mic down even, because I was like, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to laugh so hard because the way you described it, you know, I just picture it. So obviously though, right? Everyone, there was other people in the van with you.
At this point I was alone.
Oh, you were? Okay. Thank God. Okay.
Yeah. Cause Jared was still at the festival grounds at the festival that we had just played. And, Corey was cruising by himself.
Okay. So at least, all right. So you were one man show in that at that time. Okay. So I can just only imagine the reaction. I was visualizing The other guys were like maybe taking a nap or something in the van, and all of a sudden, next thing they know, they're airborne. You know, that would have been that would have been wild.
Yeah, it's a really good thing that they weren't in there. In fact, it's a miracle that I kept that thing upright. Honestly, like, I mean, I crashed my van, so it already stings enough. But I will give myself some credit, like, because the fact that I was able to pitch a move and keep it from rolling was miraculous, basically.
Oh man, that's great. That's good stuff. Now, are those gonna be songs on the next album then?
Sorry, what was that?
I said, are those two stories gonna be possible songs then on the next album, or are they on the current one?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Yeah. It's songwriting material, that's for sure.
It is. That's probably more on the lighthearted side of it, right? So you throw in a couple of those, and then you can do the other tone of music, and then it kind of balances out. That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's great. Shifting back a little bit to FSHD, you did a medical trial, right, for UCLA, and we're always trying to...
I did.
Yeah, you were a participant in it, and I always try to kind of plug those moments for those that are listening that are maybe on the fence, right? They're not, man, do I really want to volunteer myself? I know I was one of those people, and then I jumped off and went, I'm going to do it. There was one in Minnesota not far from me, and I drove up there and did that and participated. Mm-hmm. So your participation in that, I really kind of wanted to ask about that and kind of what prompted you to do it and how was the experience?
Yeah. So I participated in that medical trial down there at UCLA, and there was it was pretty tough, honestly. I didn't really want to do it. And this is mostly because as soon as my brother and I got back from that trip abroad, traveling the world and stuff like that, we're like, okay, well, this is what we're into. So like, as soon as we get back, we start planning another one. And, we had planned this like 4-month trip through Europe, and I found out that I got selected for that medical trial, I think 2 days before we were supposed to leave.
Whoa.
And it was the first medical trial. There was no placebo. This potentially groundbreaking, at least this is the way I was viewing things, potentially groundbreaking, trial. And it was like, well, I kind of have to do this, don't I? And my parents were like, you absolutely have to do this. And I was like, okay. So I did it, and I don't regret doing it. Like, in hindsight, would it have been more fun to like travel? Like, obviously it would have been more fun to travel Europe for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
But with an opportunity like that, you know, I just had to see what could happen. And while I didn't necessarily show any results from the trial, I'm at least proud that I was able to contribute to the furthering of
absolutely
of knowledge about this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I give I give you credit for it. It was a massive sacrifice there. Talk about a tough decision.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It was tough. But like, when I'm looking at my mother with like tears in her eyes telling me that she has to do this medical trial, it's like, okay, well, as if I had any other choice.
She laid the tears on you. Well,
yeah, totally.
From all of
us. I don't blame her. I don't hold it against her.
Good. Yeah, good. Good for you, Mom. But I can understand where you were torn there, you know, ready to go into the world and do this cool thing you want to do. And then, oh, wait, I got to do this. Wait, maybe I don't have to. Maybe I can just go on tour really quick instead. So I appreciate that you did that. I know many listening would be in agreement. So, and you did make a sacrifice.
Thank
of
you.
Your time,
yeah,
yourself.
I'm really glad. I'm really happy that I was able to contribute in some way to that whole deal.
Last question I got before, I definitely want to also give you some time to, you know, plug a little bit of your music and where people can find that and get a hold of you. But one of the questions I like to ask, especially those that have FSHD, and in your particular case, a musician who is, you know, passionate about his music, continues to do it regardless of the disease. I know that you have a brace that helps in that regard, which is awesome, because I think, you know, more people need to see that too. Like, look, this is how
I
adapt.
That earlier.
Yeah. So if it's a mention of of the brace and how you use that and what came up with that invention, and also the, you know, advice nugget, you know, that you would give someone that is listening and is thinking, can I keep doing this particular task that I love, but I'm not sure because FSHD is kind of in my way, you know, any advice maybe you can give someone in that state?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's kind of tricky because I know, like I've seen people that are affected much more severely than I am. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I'm one to tell you what your limitations are. But I can tell you that you can accomplish more than you might think. When you're feeling discouraged, in those moments where you're feeling most discouraged and you're most down on yourself, like you can do more than you might think. You might surprise yourself. I surprise myself on a daily basis, and I'm grateful. I mean, I'm grateful for that. Beethoven was deaf when he composed his greatest music, right?
So. Right, right. Overcame that, and yeah, totally. But I know that being a musician, especially in these times with COVID, you know, there was tours that I was on my radar to go to, you know, even though I'm an old dude, I still like to see live music from time to time. And I'd be like, oh, I would probably catch that show and those things kind of went away. And from a selfish vantage point, I was like, oh, that stinks. I can't see them. But then I realized, wait a minute, how are they making their money? You know, how are they getting out there, letting people know about their music? I know there's some virtual little concerts that can be done, and work that can be done in the studio to keep the process somewhat going. But how tough has that been for you? You know, speak as candidly as you want. And is there a way anyone here in the community can help you in that regard, you know, to keep it going?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start off by saying that any support that anyone feels inclined to offer me would just greatly appreciate it, because it has been really tough lately. I never thought that I could go this long without like performing and stuff. Cause it's just really all I want to be doing. And, in this age, there are opportunities for YouTube and social media presence and stuff like that. And I've been working hard on that. And, you can join me on these things. But it's still just not the same. It's not the same as performing, and it doesn't bring me the same amount of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. It's also not the same financially. You know, it's no secret that that Spotify rakes over musicians. You know what I mean?
Oh no. Yeah.
So it's definitely been tough financially. I've been really, really grateful, that I have two super supportive parents, that are basically, they keep me alive.
Yeah. Right.
The Rose Valley Thorns have a presence on any social media platform and any streaming service. We've got music up. So we'd love to have any of y'all join us on those. And, as far as the monetary stuff, the income has been pretty non-existent from these, kind of platforms. But one project that I started here and have been doing, and it's been one of the silver linings of this quarantine for sure, has been my Patreon. And Patreon's like a donation-based, subscription-based platform where I'll post exclusive like videos and insights and tidbits about my personal life and stuff like that for my patrons, for people who support me. And that's been it's been a really good project for me through this time, keep me motivated and keep some change in my pocket. So if anybody wants to help me out on that front, my Patreon page, just Joshua Bergman, that kind of thing is greatly appreciated.
Awesome. I'm glad that you shared that, because to me it's the same process as if you'd go see Josh perform with his band. You pay your ticket to get in, same idea. He's giving you some content through Patreon, visit him, same idea, right? We got to keep, and it's not just Josh, it's other musicians that, you know, if you know a local musician, you might want to think about reaching out in the same regard, especially if you want the musicians to still be doing their craft after this, you know, keep them viable, keep them going, because we need it. We need the music now. We're going to really need it when this is all over, because it will end, and we're going to celebrate. And what do we need for that? We need great music, and we need great musicians to still be doing what they do. And Josh is one of those people. So that's how I add to your plug, my friend. I think people got to get after that and help each other. So I really appreciate you coming on tonight, Josh. Phenomenal conversation. Had a blast talking with you. Love watching
all the
videos and the music. Yeah, it's been a real blast. So thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for doing what you do.
Absolutely, man. You stay strong, my friend, and we're going to keep listening to your music, and we're all going to visit Patreon right away.
Likewise, my friend, and best of wishes to all of our listeners, too.
So that is Josh Bergman. You can find his music, all like you said, on all the platforms, YouTube, Patreon helps him, along with other musicians. I do know that platform. It's reliable. I implore you to help Josh out if you can. And he has exclusive content on there that he's sharing. So it's not like it's not a donation site per se. It is where he has, exclusive videos about himself, probably his music, and a lot of other content that you could enjoy while helping him out. So awesome stuff. What I'm going to do here is we're going to kind of go into the events a little bit. And tonight's closing music, though, is going to be one of the Rose Valley Thorns. I think I might play the Old Bones a little bit as we close up shop tonight, because when he talked about that being inspired song that he wrote because of FSHD, that might be one to kind of close up shop. So I got an eyeball on that song to close it out tonight. So special thanks to Josh for being here. If you want to know more what's going on with FSHD Society, go to fshdsociety.org. These are the events that I'm kind of spotlighting right now. On the 13th, from 5 to 6 p.m., the Wellness Hour. Enjoy the company and fellowship of FSHers and share the challenges, talk about them, and what works for you. It's a great community reach out group. I want you to be a part of that. So I believe that's Eastern Time, 5 to 6 p.m. Then on 10/14, this is next week, we'll have another FSHD Society radio show with our guest, Kent Drescher. He's going to come on the show and talk about the work he does in regards to mindfulness, dealing with the emotional side of FSHD. So as you know, as we go through the month of our programming, we have the featured guest, which is what we had on tonight with Josh Bergman. And then we go to a mindfulness, kind of the emotional side of FSHD. That's next week. And we'll have Kent Drescher being in on that. And then, of course, go to the physical side the following week with Mitch and Bill. And that's going to be an interesting show. I'll plug that, I guess, a little bit now since I'm on it. I was given some exercises for Mitch. We connected, and he sent me some videos and do this workout. We're going to talk about that, too, because some of the stuff I've been trying to do. It's not easy, I'll tell you that, but it is very rewarding, and he's keeping me honest to it, man. He sent me two more brand new exercises to do, I think, just yesterday. Yeah, and he's keeping me going, keeping me flexible. So we're going to talk about that and maybe some of the things that you can do on the physical side to keep you going. On the October 15th, we have another webinar, FSHDU, with Molly White, the VP Medical Communication and Advocacy for Dyne Therapeutics. She's been on the show in the past. I think she might revisit on the show again after the webinar, but that is scheduled for the 15th of October. Then on the 17th of October, it is the California Virtual Chapter Meeting from 2 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And this one kind of special event I really wanted to kind of plug again is the UPIN, the Utah Program for Inherited Neuromuscular Disorders. Allison Calder of the Utah Chapter Director is talking about this event and has it out there on fshdsociety.org. It's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. I believe it's virtual. More information on that event and all the others I've listed, and some maybe I haven't got to yet. You can find out all those things at fshdsociety.org. Josh comments on the Facebook Live. Thanks again for having me. Looking forward to the next, I probably said time, right? Yeah, for the next installment. Yeah. The next installment. I'm going to check your music out, Josh, says Tenna Davidson. Tenna, thank you for being here. This was her first show. She said, hi from Texas. Glad to catch this show for the first time. awesome. Thanks for being here, Tenna. Really hope you enjoyed it. We're here every week. That's what we're trying to do, produce a show out here every week. And if you're just catching up, Tenna, all those past shows are available for you anywhere you can pretty much find podcasts. So we have that for you. So I kind of wanted to start playing this tune, like I kind of mentioned before. This is a little bit of a song called Old Bones as we close up shop. We'll see you next week on the FSHG Society radio show. So as we close it down, we'll play this song called Old Bones from the Rose Valley Thorns. Take care. Have a great week.
To try again with unhealed wounds to tend round and round we go, drowning in the flow, trying to make amends while trapped in the undertow. But these old bones, you know, they keep on rolling stones and keep on moving mountains. These old bones, they keep on rolling stones and keep on moving mountains with every inch you counted. These old bones, you know, they keep on rolling stones and keep on moving mountains, baby. These old bones, they keep on rolling stones, though every bump my body screams, moving boulders full of bad ideas and shoddy dreams. Some days the pain is difficult to redeem, and in more ways than one, things ain't always what they seem. The weight of these stones, all this weight will never break. These old bones.